afternoon's conference call is now being recorded.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the locking of a domain name subject to UDRP proceedings PDP working group call on Thursday, 6 December. On the call today we have Laurie Anderson, Hago Dafala, Kristin Durain, Alan Greenberg, Volk Grainman, Yetunde Johnson, Celia Lerman, David Mayer, Mikaeli Nealon, David Roach Turner, Faisal Shah. We have apologies from Luke Surfer and Gabriella Slack. And from staff, we have Marika Konings, Barry Coe, and myself, Julia Chavelin. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. Sorry for being dialing in a little bit late, dealing with stuff and things which I will bore you with. Okay, as per usual, does anybody have any updates to their statement of interest or declaration of interest?
Yeah, hey, Michele, this is Faisal.
Hello, Faisal. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Or good morning. Hey, I think I'm as an individual on this working group. I kind of designated myself, but I've referenced Mark Monitor as my employer, and that will not be the case as of this month. So I want that to be reflected.
Okay, now let's translate that back into something Michele can understand, because I didn't quite get that. Are you saying that as of this month you are no longer with Mark Monitor?
That's what I'm saying.
Okay, fine. So you are 100% individual as of this month?
Yes.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. Perfect. Thank you. And congratulations on making huge amounts of money.
That's not part of the SOI.
It's irrelevant whether it's part of the SOI or not. I'm still congratulating you on making huge amounts of money. okay, then. Apart from people who are now multimillionaires, are there any other changes to SOIs or DOIs? Take that as a no. Perfect. Okay, then. Marika has put up on the thingy the work plan, which, of course, we are being quite bold about and are a little bit behind on. Cough, says he, and I should accept partial, if not total, responsibility for that. Marika, tell us how badly behaved we are, please.
Yes, this is Marika. So initially, I think we'd foreseen to finalize a review of our public comments on the 15th of October, and I think we have actually come to completion at this meeting, where we have the final public review tool, and people need to review that and make sure that they're happy with what is in there. So if you look at, I think, our target deadline, where I think we're almost basically 2 months behind our initial proposed schedule, we had as a target line, a target date to publish an initial report by the end of this year. I think we've done a lot of good work, and I think it's for good reasons that we've taken more time, because I think it was indeed important to go through those comments, and I think it has given us as well a lot of useful information that will come back as well in an initial report. I've already started working on an initial report, like the basic outline and some of the basic sections, and some of the things can already be filled in. I need to go back now a bit to the public comment review tool so I can insert some of those discussions as well in relation to some of the charter questions. But I think that the most work that we now need to do is really to start drilling down on, you know, what are the actual recommendations that we want to put forward in the initial report for community consideration. And I think to that end, what we put forward is the straw man, and hopefully that will help in framing the working group's thinking and eventual recommendations that then can feed into to the initial report. So I don't know if it's worth setting another target deadline or just try to see over the next few meetings how much progress we make on coming to closure or agreement on draft recommendations, and from that then will flow, of course, the publication of the initial report. I don't know how you prefer to go about that.
Okay. Does anybody have any thoughts, any comments, anything to say? I'll pick on Alan and comments. I know he has a thought on this.
I think what Marika is suggesting is reasonable. I'm always cynical that we'll make new deadlines because we're always optimistic, but I'm happy.
Okay. I am too. One last time, anybody have any other input or thoughts? Okay, I'll take that silence to mean that you all agree with this, and we shall move on. Rika, could you put up the straw man thing again, please?
Yeah, this is Marika. If we can just go, I actually forgot to put a number in front of that. It's my mistake on the agenda, because one point I did have there is on the public comment review tool. So
Sorry.
That's my fault. I didn't put a number in front of
it. Well, it's not your fault. I should have read all the lines. I was just looking at numbers. So I kind of went two and three.
Right. It's just to remind everyone that I did circulate the latest version of that, in which I've basically tried to capture all the points and comments that were made by the working group, going through the different comments. So if people can just have a look at that and let me know if there are any elements that have been that were forgotten or any things that are not correct, so we can basically finalize that document, because that will be incorporated in the initial report, either the whole document or as a reference. But one of the obligations the working group has is to review comments and provide responses to those. So if there's anything you think that needs to be updated there, please let me know. And maybe we can set us a deadline, the latest by the next meeting, so people have a chance to look at it until next week.
Okay.
Sounds fine.
So homework for everybody is... Well, it's optional homework. Either you look over and give some feedback on the review tool, or we will work on the basis that what Marika has attached is what everybody agrees.
It's comment, or you can't complain later.
Yeah, thank you, Alan. That's pretty much the way to put it. As in, it's a bit like voting in an election. You either vote in the election and get to choose your masters, or if you don't vote in the election, then you can't complain about it afterwards. No, that doesn't stop people from doing so. Okay, so the straw man. I'm just going to zoom in a little bit because I can't read this damn thing. That's a bit better. All right. Okay, so we've already got a couple of notes there from last week, which Marika has updated. Does anybody else have any thoughts on this at the moment? Is there anything that isn't clear? Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. Just to note that indeed the only changes I made are on the second page, to clarify that updates to who is should be seen as corrections. So it's not making changes, but just to correct information that is existing there. I also recall that I think Michaela made the suggestion that we maybe use the term freeze instead of lock. But after thinking about it a bit more and as well getting some internal feedback and as well talking to Michaela about it, the approach there would be to maybe first try to define what the lock or the freeze actually does and what are the exact features that cannot be changed, and then maybe to see if those correlate with an EPP status, so we can actually be very precise and actually already have something that is defined somewhere else instead of having to define something ourselves. And then something we've discussed before as well, if there is not one specific EPP status, or maybe there are more statuses that would apply, or if there's no status but we want to come up with a new one, that would be another approach to consider. But I think in order for the definitional part, we might first need to decide on what elements are required to be locked or frozen at that specific point in time, which you also still need to define at what point in time that would happen. So just to clarify that.
All right. Thank you, Marika. Then we go to Christine and then Alan.
Hi, this is Christine from NAF. Yeah, I don't disagree with anything Marika just said. I just wanted to add that in our discussions, and the straw man put the actual lock at the wrong place. Step four should actually be between steps one and two. So the first thing that happens upon the filing of a complaint is that the lock is requested immediately. And so, and that's in line with the, you know, the vast majority of the comments as well, is that the lock be put in place immediately. So I just wanted to make sure that we recorded that as well. And I know that we have some discussion about what immediately means, but we, you know, that obviously that's something that we can continue to work out.
All right. Thank you. Alan, and then Marika, is that a new hand?
Yes.
Okay. Just checking. Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, a question and then maybe a comment. Marika, when you're talking about an EPP lock, are you talking about it purely because it may be a convenient definition or because we could conceivably use the EPP lock to enact the lock freeze?
This is Marika, to answer that, I think it's probably both, but especially the second, because I think what I understand as well, that you know, by talking about EPP, we can be very specific and it will be really clear what needs to happen. And those statuses are already defined. So I think that a suggestion I got from some colleagues saying if we can be as specific as possible and using EPP, that would be, from our perspective, I think the ideal scenario. But again, this is, of course, open to discussion.
Yeah. The implication of using EPP is for registrars who currently address the locking issue by transferring the domain to a private portfolio, we're probably forcing them to change their work methods. And so it's something we need to discuss if we're going to go down that path. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but clearly we're suggesting that a registrar who may be doing technically things sufficiently right now might have to change if we require the EPP lock in lieu of or in addition to anything else they do. Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to go to Marika, then to Christine. No, Christine, that's an old hand. Marika, and then to me, and then to David.
Yeah, this is Marika. I just had a clarifying question for Christine. So the moment you would ask for locking, upon receipt of complaints, you go immediately to the registrar to ask for locking. Is that the same notice you send to the registrar to ask for verification? Is that the same package? Basically, you ask for lock and verification at the same time? Or are those two different communications you have with the registrar?
No, it happens all at the same time. And then once we get the email back from the registrar with the verifying data and having, you know, confirmed that the lock is in place, then we can actually do the full compliance review and, you know, make the complainant, you know, adjust the front information or whatever in the complaint. Then we, in step three, would forward the complaint to everybody, again, including the registrar and notifying them of the commencement of the process. So that step three is still correct. It's just that step four is moved up before step two.
Right, and if I can ask one more question. So when you then confirm the proceedings, that's basically to the registrar and the complainant. Do you also send it to the respondents at that stage?
Yeah, step three is what you have in the straw man is step three is the formal commencement of the process, and that's where we officially serve the complaint on the parties, including the respondent. And that's the respondent's first official notification, and that's with the complaint as finalized. So the first draft of the complaint may have errors in it or something that we have made the complainant go back and correct. So the version that we send out in step three is the actual official commencement version where, you know, supposedly everything is fixed and everything is in order, and that's the official notice. And we've been talking a little bit about whether or not the UDRP should be amended to remove notice of the respondent by the complainant at step one, because we perform this notice function at step three.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. I put myself in there. What was I going to say? Yes. I think one of the things I'm a little bit wary of is being overly prescriptive with respect to which EPP statuses we should use. I mean, I'd specifying them specifically. I think we should focus more on the functionality, in other words, the end result. As for Alan's comment about how this would impact registrars, while I agree that, yes, obviously, if we prescribe a particular process in some way, then that would obviously impact them, but at the same time, the reason why things are being done the way they are being done at the moment is due to the lack of certainty. David, and then Celia.
Thanks.
Thanks, Michaeli. I just wanted to make a couple of points further to the issue that Marika and Christine were just discussing. And indeed, I think it's worth just emphasising indeed that there are typically these four processes that Christine described, which is the filing of the complaint with the provider, and the filing of the complaint typically goes both to the provider and to the registrar, and typically to the respondent. And this is the point at which the proceedings become pending. Then the provider issues a verification request to the registrar, and this includes the lock request. Then there's an opportunity to correct the complaint, and only after these corrections have made is there the notification of commencement of the proceedings and the commencement of the 20-day response period. So there are a number of points at which the registrar, in effect, receives notice. One is on the filing of the complaint. One is in receipt of the registration, verification and lock request. And another is on the formal notification and commencement of proceedings. And my second point is just a suggestion, which is in the straw man where in point three, we currently refer to the UDRP provider forwarding the complaint to the registrar and notifying the registrar of the commencement. Maybe we should say there to the registrar and parties and notify the respondent of the commencement, because the purpose of that third notification is really to put the notice, put the respondent on notice of the commencement of the 20-day response period.
Okay, thank you. Celia?
I wanted to follow up on what Christine said about, eliminating the requirement to notify the respondent. And I will need Marika's help here, but I don't want to get too much on what is the scope of the working group, because I know we have discussed this. But after the last call, I had an email sent with Marika saying that, where she clarified to me that this recommendation would still be taken into account and for UDRP reform. So it's still not that clear to me to what extent we can recommend eliminating this requirement at this stage. Sorry to go back on this point, but maybe to...
Sorry, Celia, just to be clear, which requirement are you referring to?
Let's say we recommend as a working group to eliminate the requirement to notify the respondent with the filing of the complaint.
Okay.
Which is what we, in point number one in the comments in the Stroman model, this is more or less what we're saying, with eliminating this requirement help. So that's the first of my questions. I think this would be a really good idea, and the second point I wanted, so I would ask Marika if she could, share this with the group to clarify this again, and then I wanted to make a comment on after, next to the box one, with all the comments to the first step of the process. Just making it very, I would add to that comment that it won't be necessary for the complainant to notify the respondent, saying that expressly, so that it's clear for people that use these recommendations later. Because now it's implied, but I just think we should make it more clear.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Greenberg.
Thank you. Regarding whether, and I think the question is whether us saying that the respondent not be notified by the complainant is within our mandate and within our scope, I would say it is completely within our scope. If our job is to make sure a lock works, and, you know, that's not what the starter said, but that's the summary in my mind, and we find it doesn't work because the respondent has advanced notice, I think that's wholly within our scope. It certainly could come under general reform as well, but I think it is.
Just one second. Marika, or the operator, somebody, could you mute the line where all the noise is coming from, please?
I don't know.
I don't know what that is.
Ask the operator to look into this, so they will mute the person.
All right, thank you. Sorry, Alan, go ahead.
Okay, I've said what I plan to. I think it's completely within scope. If we deem that notice to the respondent to be one of the problems with the current locking mechanism or locking process, then I think it's within scope, even though it may not have been mentioned explicitly in our charter. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Alan. As usual, Marika gets preference over David. Nothing personal, David, but you know how things are. Marika and then David.
Thanks, Michaela. This is Marika. Maybe just to clarify as well, because I think part of the confusion comes over the fact that we do have this, you know, pending policy development process on the overall review of the UERP, which will take place in a, you know, future point of time. I think it's 1 year after, I think, new GTLDs come into effect or something like that. But basically, apart from that, the Council did decide to initiate a policy development process on this very narrow, specific issue. And I think, as Alan said, you know, I think we can... Now, there's a really good justification why that maybe that specific targeted change would really help in solving the issue that we're trying to address. So I think you probably need to look as well, like if there in the end, you know, there's consensus from this working group, there's no opposition to it. And at the same time as well, there's council support for it. This is a policy development process, so changes can be made on that basis, you know, to existing consensus policies. So again, if there's, you know, consensus and no question on that or no opposition and the same level from the council, I think it's definitely within scope to make such a suggestion, as it specifically relates to the, you know, the questions we've been given on outlining an overall procedure on what needs to happen in the case of a UERP proceeding in relation to when needs to lock and what needs to happen and who needs to be notified when. So I think that's just from my perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Marika. And finally, David.
Thanks, Michaela. And it's always a pleasure to go after Marika because we get the benefit of her wisdom on these points, which I think is really useful here. And my suggestion is, in fact, a very modest one, although it relates a bit to what Alan had suggested earlier and Christine, and now which we've just heard then from Marika as well. And that suggestion is a textual one, and it's directed at perhaps helpfully, I hope, removing some of the definitional uncertainty. I think we've been wrestling a bit in this group within this group so far. And it's under the third aspect of the straw man proposal, where in the last sentence of that subsection we say preventing changes of registrar and registrant upon notification/request for verification. I think it would be useful if we would eliminate the word notification from that sentence and substitute in its place the word pendency, because the point at which a UERP proceeding becomes pending is the point at which the prohibition on registrant transfer, in fact, comes into play. And the term notification is also synonymous with the point at which the respondent's 20-day response period occurs. And this is something that happens, you know, quite a way into the procedure. You know, and it's the point which occurs after the verification has happened and after the lock, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it would be useful if here in this sentence, instead of referring to upon notification and slash request, we would refer instead to upon pendency slash request.
Anybody have any thoughts on that?
I don't know, it's Alan. I don't know. I don't understand the process well enough to argue with someone who seems to know what he's talking about.
Okay, Christine, go ahead.
I don't disagree with the substance of what David said. I just wanted to mention that pendency has the potential of being a term that registrars may not understand the definition of. David and I understand it very clearly because we deal with it on a daily basis. But there may be, I don't object to the use of the word pendency, but there may be in our final product sort of a definition of what pendency means so that everybody's on the same page as to what that is. And then it would accommodate, as David pointed out, sort of the people who want, the registrars who want to lock, you know, as soon as they get wind of any sort of dispute, you know, people like GoDaddy who have a legal team who can figure out if it's a legitimate dispute and want to lock it right away. And then people who otherwise have to wait for us to email them and say, guess what, there's a dispute pending. So I think it covers both. So I don't disagree at all with David's suggestion. I just worry that we're going to spend just as much time explaining to registrars at what point the complaint or the dispute is actually pendent.
Thank you, and actually double thank you, because I put myself in the queue. The first language that I speak is English. I would consider myself to be reasonably well-educated. The term pendency to me is not one that I am immediately familiar with, and I can see a lot of people getting quite confused by it, and thank you for confirming my suspicion. It would be helpful to get some input maybe from non-English speakers who... Okay, Volker's saying it's not English, it is legal. The problem is that people... Not all registrars have legal staff, and policies are not meant to be just great big legal documents and nothing else. At least that's my understanding. Over to you, David. Go ahead.
Thanks, Michaeli, and I apologize to all on the call for the legalese. It's tricky, I know, because we're dealing with a legal instrument, and some terms have specific meanings. But another term that might be synonymous and more useful for registrars seeking to understand what this means in plain English could be if we would use a term which appears under paragraph one of the rules in the definition of a respondent, which is the holder of the domain name at the time at which the complaint is initiated. So initiated might be a better term here to use than pendency, but what it's intended to encapsulate is the time at which the proceeding first becomes pending. It's not the time at which the complaint is formally notified, which is when the respondent's response period runs from. And that's why I'm keen here that we not use the term notification, that we use either a term, if pendency doesn't work, initiated, I think, could be a good substitute. First notice might be another possible substitute. But I really think we should try and avoid use of this term notification, because it can just as easily be misunderstood as the formal notification of the proceeding being the point from which the respondent's response time runs, whereas in fact the proceeding becomes pending as it is initiated in a factual sense and in terms of the operation of the policy from the point at which the complaint is first filed. That doesn't mean that we, as a working group, need to make a recommendation or a decision that that's the point from which the lock needs to be implemented, but it is the factual point in time from which the registrant's obligation not to transfer the domain name begins to run. It's the first point from which we can potentially have a cyberflight issue. So if we're talking about ways in which we can most effectively manage the cyberflight problem, there's a number of points at which we can manage that through the application of a lock. You know, you could say the most efficient point could be, well, when the complaint is first filed, when the proceeding is initiated. You know, we've discussed this, and of course that's going to present some problems, for a number of participants in this group. So it may be that we end up with a compromise solution, which is that the lock occurs from the point of first request from the provider or from the registrar verification or whatever it is. But I just think we need to be quite precise about the terms that we use in this straw man here so as to avoid use of the term notification, where I think what we mean is in fact initiated or pending or first notice or one of those terms I mentioned.
Okay, David, I'm just going to interrupt you there just one second just so that we're quite clear. You hate the term notification. you love the term pendency, but you were willing to accept the term initiated. Is that correct?
Good summary.
Okay, thank you. Now, I'm just trying to summarize this for, you know, just so we can just get the concise bits out of it. Okay. Just going, before I take other people in the queue, something from Christine, which I think is important, that she put on the chat. She feels it's part of the scope of this group to provide a plain English translation of what the registrars are expected to do. Christine, thank you. As a registrar, my view would be, I thought that was what the entire point of this working group was to make it clearer and easier for registrars to comply and not have massive headaches. Matt seems to be happy enough with the term initiated, and so is Laurie. So now, Alan Yeatundi, and apologies for the pronunciation, and then Marika.
Okay, thank you. I'll agree or even strengthen the need to define terms, and I think that becomes even more important when we're using common English words. You know, the benefit of legalese that most people don't understand is they have to go look at the definition. A common word is sometimes worse because, you know, and I know within documents normally we capitalize it if it's a defined term, but I think we have to be really careful. I'll point out in the last version of the PDP rules, I believe a PDP was initiated at three different times because it's a word that makes sense in English, and various different steps were called initiation. So, although I'm not objecting to using that term, let's make sure that it can't be misunderstood. And I thank all those people in the background for agreeing with me.
I thank them too. I have no idea who they are, but they sound like they're having fun. Yeatundi? I'm sorry about the pronunciation. I'm not sure on what's correct. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. Yes, it is Yeatundi. You've pronounced it very well. I was going to comment on the pendency notification and then the initiated. I was going to say that, yes, I like the idea of initiated because it is probably more easier to understand, but I also kind of agree with the previous speaker about there being some kind of specification of time or stage, because initiated at what stage, at what time, at what period, to make it clearer.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. I'm actually a bit torn here because I think indeed pendency is the word that is used in the UDRP itself, but I think at the same time it's indeed important that we clarify when that happens. And I recall, and I think it was Christine saying on last week's meeting that term had been clarified, I think she said by compliance to indicate indeed that pendency means, you know, from the moment that the complaint has been filed. And if that is so, we might be able to find that language and basically use that as the definition so that we can use the term pendency, but at the same time provide the definition of what pendency means, you know, referencing that even back to, you know, that's something that registrars have to be compliant with in this stage and has been clarified in this or that document. So I don't know if I got that correct, but maybe, you know, Christine can clarify that.
Christine?
That is correct, but I just noted in the chat that it was a verbal, it's been done in phone calls to me, or, you know, where we've discussed it and then the compliance has called the registrar and said, you know, yes, it's pending at the time of filing. But I don't believe, and maybe David knows, but I don't believe anyone from compliance has ever actually written that any place. But like I said, David may have better documentation than I do on that.
Hi.
David, a very simple question. Has this been written anywhere, yes or no?
To my knowledge, this is David, it hasn't.
Okay, that's fine. There's one of, just as a side note, as chair, we've had an issue in the past, Alan, I think, will know exactly what I'm referring to, where compliance has informed other staff that they have issues implementing policies due to the choice of wording. So it might not be a bad idea if we were to reach out to compliance now, maybe? I don't know, Marika, what you think?
I'm happy to go back to compliance and ask them if you know they're willing to put that in writing how they interpret pendency, and you know, as Christine said, if they've used it already in telephonic conversations and presumably then as well in their dealings with registrars, you know, hopefully it's also something they will be willing to put into writing, so I can go back to them and ask if they're willing to use the definitions that they're handling, so we can use it then as well in I think in our clarification of what we mean with either pendency or notification, whatever term we decide to use. But I think I agree with the comments before that we need to be able to pin down, you know, when, because notification, you know, as a non-native English speaker, I could see notification as well as the notification of commencement, for example. It's not, you know, difficult to make the jump to that. So I think the more precise we can be, the better it's going to be at the end of the day for everyone to understand what the requirements are.
Okay, thanks, Marika. But just as a note, I mean, one of the things we don't want to end up with is something where we spend months on this, we produce a final report, and then it goes to implementation and compliance tells other ICANN staff that we've got it completely wrong and there's no way that they can do X, Y, or Z or something equally helpful. Alan, go ahead.
Thank you. I just wonder if Marika has any insight. Our new CEO has said that in the future, the people involved in implementing the policy and presumably, which may be in this case registrar relations or legal staff or compliance, will be more involved in the policy process to make sure that we do not end up with situations such as McKaylee is referring to. Is that something that is embodied in any way now, or is that just a future hope?
This is Marika. On that note, yes, that's definitely the idea, and you know, to reassure you there, because, for example, the straw man, before I send it to all of you, I first circulated as well internally, because you know, I don't consider myself an expert on a UDRP, or maybe slowly becoming one, but so I circulated to colleagues to get their input, and the idea is, you know, we had a call, for example, we have regular calls with compliance where we brief them on the issues we're working on, and we actually had a call with them yesterday, so I specifically briefed them on where we are with our discussions, and I've alerted them as well that I'll be sending over, you know, some of the drafts we're looking at to already get their input at this stage. So it's really the idea to make sure that, as well, they'll have an important part to play, you know, when we finalize our recommendations, to really make sure that what we come up with at the end of the day is indeed implementable and enforceable. So so that's definitely the plan. And I think, you know, going back with that concrete question will already help as well to establish that going forward.
So hopefully we will not have a rerun of the situation McKaylee is referring to.
Without referring to it by name.
I'll refer to it by name if you'd like.
Well, I was just going to have fun kind of doing an attack on Oscar Wilde on it.
I was going to point people to a comment period.
Well, one could have done that, but I was as I am Irish, using the entire Oscar Wilde reference would have been amusing for me anyway. Let's not beat up on people. oh dear, sorry. I seem to have swallowed half the dust in the office by accident. Okay, then. So the entire kind of pendency initiation and all that, we're going to see if ICANN compliance can come back to Marika with and categorically define something for us so that we know that we're no longer we know what we're dealing with.
Or, McKaylee, or tell us we need to define it.
Well, that too. Either works, but as long as we have something from them so we don't have a situation in 16... Actually, no, I'm just going to beat around the bush. For those the rest of you on this call who don't know what the hell myself and Alan are talking about, we spent 18 months working on a particular working group in relation to post-expiry domain name recovery. In other words, what happens to domains when they expire. The output of that working group was a report, and the report specifically did not specify certain things because the working group had discussed this at length, and it was decided that it was not appropriate to mention them. Not necessary. There's a philosophical difference between ALAC and the registrars on this, but we both agree that we had discussed it at length, and we're not going to mention it. Unfortunately, we were informed by compliance that the lack of mention of this meant that it rendered the entire thing completely unenforceable, which was the first we'd heard of this since we'd spent months on the damn thing and had multiple comment periods. So ultimately, as chairs of this group, myself and Alan don't particularly want to have the same problem arise. Will that summarize it neatly, Alan?
That's sufficient.
Thank you. So, Marika, if you do not get a clear response from compliance in a short time, then I will have to write to them as chair, and if that doesn't work, we'll have to get the GNSO person to do it or somebody else, because ultimately we need to have clarity. Marika, you have your hand up.
Yeah, this is Marika. Just note as well on that discussion on that previous project, because I think sometimes the issue as well is that, you know, we discuss certain things but prefer not to spell them out because there's no agreement. And indeed that, and then hope that it will resolve itself at the stage of implementation. And I think there, again, it's just a note for the working group. The more specific we can be, the easier it will become for staff as well to do the implementation, and the less interpretation we have to try to do, and when it will come to the forefront on certain issues that people had a different idea of what something meant. And we, you know, I know in certain work groups people like to leave it vague because they know if we drill down to the details, it's not easy to come to agreement. So I really would like to encourage everyone, indeed, that as much detail we can put in here, the easier it will be at the end of the day for us to go to an implementation plan that will actually match exactly what the working group was trying to achieve.
Okay, thank you, Marika. And David is pulling up a bunch of WIPO cases with discussions of both this famous pendency and cyberflight. So these will be referenced in the email that goes out after this call, referencing stuff. Says he, I love the word stuff. It's so useful. Okay then. Right. Just dealing with the straw man, let's move past this entire pendency and initiation thing. Does anybody have any other thoughts on any other aspects of this at the moment? Marika, go ahead.
Well, this is Morgan, and another thing we might want to discuss is the time frame. I think I haven't heard any objections. It seems that at least from those on the call, there seems to be, you know, agreement to consider taking out the notification of the respondent at the time of filing. I think there seems to be, at least I haven't heard any opposition yet on, locking upon the, upon the notification by the UDRP provider to the registrar or the verification request. The registrar will lock, provide the details to the UDRP provider, and then upon commencement is when the respondent will be informed, and at that point the domain name is already locked. So I think some of the questions that we still need to discuss is, okay, so what is exactly locked? Which changes are prevented at that stage? The time frame, what kind of time frame are we looking at, and how to reflect that in any kind of recommendations? There's also this notion of, I think the recommendations under step 5, I believe, where we talk about allowing changes or corrections to contact information, and requiring at that stage, if that happens, that also the UDRP panel is informed, and that way as well addressing any reveal situation, so basically leaving that up between the proxy and privacy provider and the UDRP panel. So I think those are some elements that would be good to get some further input on, whether, you know, what is in the straw man currently is what is supported by people on the call, or whether there are, and I think on the 24 hours, I think we already said that we need to talk about business days. So I think that's one where we already need to make a change. But I think those are elements where it would be helpful to get some further input and feedback from the working group.
Okay, thanks, Marika. And also Christine as well is also mentioning time frames and suggested processes for removing the lock from domains. So anybody? Just to reiterate what Marika said, I'd also support the working days or business days concept as opposed to speaking flatly in terms of day or 24 hours.
Yeah,
nobody.
I think there was already general agreement on that one.
Well, okay. So we'll work on the basis that they're all happy with that.
So, Marika, then, so the there is support for having it as within one business day? Is that what registrars feel is an appropriate time frame, or should it be longer, shorter? Should there be a more of a range?
Marika, it's Alan. I would suggest putting in one day. We may get flack on it during the review of the draft, and if so, we may consider changing it. But it's hard. It's, you know, given that a business day is defined in your local business rules, I find it hard to argue with that. We may want to clarify whose business day it is. Of course, the provider and the registrar may be in very different parts of the world following very different calendars.
Matt has his hand up. Just one thing, just to come back to you, Alan, very, very quickly. If we were to add something just to say excluding weekends, i.e. Saturday and Sunday, then I wouldn't be upset about the concept of day. But I would be very upset without that. Matt, go ahead.
I was just going to say one thing that we may want to do is even be a little bit more specific. So, you know, if you get a request after 1 p.m., on a business day, you have to do it before 1 p.m. the next business day, or if it comes in later than that, it just has to be by 5 o'clock the next business day, just so we're trying to build in as close as we can to the 24-hour requirement that we started with and keep that flowing through to the next business day as much as we can.
And Lisa has just pointed out on the chat, the weekend is not Saturday and Sunday in certain parts of the world. Those are working days. And somebody else is saying, if we remove the requirement for the complaint to notify the respondent, then there's not that much urgency to lock as there is now. That's a fair point as well. Anybody else have any other thoughts on this?
Hey, this is Matt, sorry. I'll take my hand out. One additional thing, I think the assumption is that the registrar is not supposed to be informing the registrant prior to imposing the lock. So that may be something that's worth just being very specific about. Otherwise, the 24 hours doesn't necessarily solve anything if the registrar immediately says, hey, person who's using our service, we got a UDRP complaint. Would you like to make any changes to your UDRP or to your WHOIS data before we impose the lock? So I think that's something that we need to spell out.
Okay. Thank you. And Matt, you have a disagree as opposed to your hand down, just so you're aware. Okay, we've got about 8 minutes left, just so people are aware.
Michaela, it's Alan. If Matt is really disagreeing, I'd like to know, hear it.
I don't think he is, though.
Okay. Well, he didn't change it either.
I mean, I could be wrong. I think he's just trying to take his hand down and put the disagree up instead.
Ah, okay.
He just said he's not. The poor computer is having...
Got it.
The poor computer using by him. So, yeah, okay. He's having issues with... yeah, fine. He's not disagreeing. It's grand. Okay, then. Thoughts on removing locks? Anything there? Does anybody have any thoughts on that? No? Christine.
Hey, again, this is Christine. I just wanted to say, as far as removing the lock goes, there might not be a lot of sort of, you know, necessarily issues with it, with the way the people who interpret it are interpreting it. But again, I go back, sort of circle back, I feel like, record to the sort of the explanation or the explanatory portion of this process, which is sort of defining for registrars who don't understand what the 10 business day hold means if the complainant prevails and what the 15-day prohibition on transfer means in either case. So I think that even if there's not a lot of disagreement on this point, spelling out in a sort of a plain text document of best practices for what that looks like for the individual registrar, I think, is going to be very helpful. Again, the people participating on this call don't have any problems because they know what they're doing. But I think we're writing this document for the people who don't know what they're doing. And I would like to see a little bit of best practice clarification for those people. It would definitely, I think, help, you know, people trying to be in compliance.
Okay, thank you. Marika, then me, then Alan, and then Alan. Sorry.
Yeah, this is Marika. Just a question, because we're talking about unlocking, but if I understood correctly from our previous call, I think the process that was described, if I recall well, I think by Volker, is that actually the unlocking only happens after the transfer has been taking place, and in most cases, the registrar will get the notification from the UDRP provider that the proceeding has been suspended, and at that point, they wait for the instructions on where the domain name should be transferred, and they take care of the transfer, and only when they receive notification that the proceeding has been terminated, that is the moment when they unlock. I don't know if I misunderstood that, but maybe that's something as well we need to clarify, whether we actually talk about unlocking or what happens indeed when a proceeding is terminated and the steps that happen preceding that. So it's just a point of clarification from my perspective. And Volker puts an X, so I probably got it wrong.
Okay. I'm just going to make one very, very quick comment. Christine, I'm on this call. That does not mean that I know exactly what I'm doing. One of the reasons I'm part of this working group is because I would like to know exactly what I'm meant to do, and I don't have a massive legal team. Alan and then Volker.
Thank you. Just a warning, again, based on sad experience, anything we put in a recommendation as a best practice may well never see the light of day in terms of anyone remembering it's there, except for archivists who read historic documents. We really need a mechanism. If we want something to be our best practice, we need to somehow disseminate it and make sure, as part of our recommendation, that it's going to live on past this working group. Again, talking about the same PDP that Michele was talking about, there were best practices in there, and I know of absolutely no action which will remind people that they're there or attempt to make them actually live. So let's make sure that if we think it's important that we disseminate something so people are at least aware of it, we propose a mechanism to do that, not just write it in the recommendation and hope someone will take it upon themselves to carry forward. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Volker, good afternoon.
Hello. Just to clarify maybe that point that I was making last week, in the case of a suspension, that usually arises when the complainant requests such a suspension, and the purpose of the suspension is to allow the transfer of the domain name from the respondent to the complainant. So at that point, we need to remove the lock once we have the agreement from both parties in place. So if both parties confirm to us that they want a transfer, then we unlock the domain, push it into an account of the complainant. The complainant can then modify the domain to his needs and requirements and transfer the domain name out, and after that the complainant if the suspension is not removed, then the process is terminated automatically, but to affect the purpose of the suspension, the removal of the lock at that point is required. And I think the UDRP also covers that, because the transfer from the respondent to the complainant is one of the circumstances where the removal of the lock is permitted.
Is that it, Volker? Hello?
Yep.
Okay, sorry. I thought you said finished at mid-sentence. I was wondering. Alan, is that an old or a new hand?
Sorry, old hand.
Okay. It's not old, it's slightly more mature. Badoom, tish. Sorry. I'll behave. Okay, then. I've got 2 minutes left.
Michele, the term we're using in another group is the vestigial hand.
I'm going to have to Google that now, because I have no idea what that means. Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. Just to know, then I'll probably need to update as well the public comment review tool, because I didn't catch it the way Volker described it on the last call, so I'll make sure as well to update it there to reflect that when a proceeding is suspended, at that point the lock is also removed and not at a later stage.
Okay, thank you.
And if I can maybe make another note on the next agenda item before we close the call. For the meeting on the 20th of December, we actually have a conflict with the GNSO Council meeting that takes place at the same time. So we'll be sending out a doodle poll to try to see if we can find another time or day for only that week to make sure we can have a call, but avoiding the conflict with the GNSO Council meeting.
Okay, perfect.
Start for the doodle poll.
Volker, go on. You had your hand up, go on.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify again. The suspension notice does not immediately mean that we remove the lock. The lock is removed then when we receive agreement from both parties that the lock can be removed, and at a point where the complainant has already taken over ownership by having the domain name pushed into its account. So the suspension itself is not the removal of the lock, but the allowing the transfer from the respondent to the complainant. That's the time when we remove the lock for that to happen.
Okay, thanks.
Right, and also as well for next week's call, I will not be here. Alan will be looking after you, and if he can't make it, Marika will be here, and if Marika can't make it, I'm sure somebody will manage. Maybe Julia or Barry or whoever. Hope you all have a nice week, and if anybody has any thoughts or anything on the straw man, would you please share it with the work with the list? And if you have any comments, feedback, positive or negative, on the review tool thingy that Marika circulated, please send it in, or we will consider your silence to be agreement. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, Michaela. See you next week.
Thanks,
Michaela.
Bye.